Let me show you how this is done. Hold the glass up and examine the wine against the light. You're looking for color and clarity. Now, stick your nose in it. Maybe some strawberry. Oh, there's just a flutter of like a nutty Edam cheese.
When do we drink it?
Now.
Mmm.
Are you chewing gum?
No.
Spit it out.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
You are about to participate in a great adventure.
All right, everybody, get ready for a blast from the past.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay-sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about that cute little adorable grape, but we're afraid to ask. That's what we're here for. We are your media resource on everything that goes in that charming little glass. And yes, our wine crush is back, and we have worked very hard on the zen and the happiness. I have noticed that Mr. Bernhardt has decided to grace us with his presence.
Yes, I am here. I'm always glad to be here.
We're always happy to have you. I think after you had a run where the girls were left alone for some shows this year,
yeah,
that you kind of ran
guys,
out.
You guys got together and did shows without me, and it was, I don't know, I felt strange.
Well, when we made you so nervous over the Valentine's show and you just kind of stormed off in a huff, we really didn't feel like we had a choice.
I had the electric shock treatments, and I'm back, and I'm fine now.
You are. I like the way the hair stands on end. I like the new look. Everything else, very, very good. The jeweling around the mic, though, we probably want to avoid that so we don't have some technical difficulties.
We're working on that.
Okay.
There I go in third person again. We're working on that.
Oh, God. Please, no. I heard this before. I know how this ends. Let's not go there. We cannot have technical difficulties today, though. We have got a great guest. Mr. Dan Berger is joining us. He has been on the show before, of course, and I think you should know the name. Anyone who is truly into wine and reads articles, listens to blogs, listens to shows, everybody knows who Dan Berger is. We're going to have fun. We're going to do a little debating. And this all started because Dan wrote a great article, The Blanding of American Wine. And we're going to debate the concept of how things are starting to taste similar or not taste similar and what we can do to fix that. So that is the goal today, really to kind of pick things apart and see what kind of bits and pieces we can make out of it. And as always, we do have your calls and your emails, and I appreciate those lately. We have gotten some great recommendations on, one, some wine songs. And Kent has made some progress in putting that together, but since we pretty much ran him off.
Some of these are hard to find, I should tell you that. But they're good. They're all good suggestions. We appreciate the suggestions, but they're hard to find.
You know what's been surprising me as we get more and more wine songs? Of course, there were traditional ones that we've started the crush with. I'm wondering about our listener base, because I keep seeing a whole bunch of country songs.
Yeah, which surprised me. First of all, I didn't know there were that many country songs about wine. I know there are lots about beer. But I didn't know there were many wine country songs out there.
Well, once you got past Strawberry Wine and Spodeodio and some other things, you know, you don't really think about it. But I think this leads to a very interesting topic of conversation. Maybe you and I are a little bit guilty of stereotyping.
Maybe so.
We are so surprised that we're getting so much country music and country songs and that mention wine that perhaps maybe that's why people listen to the show.
That's true. And one of the things I have found out from my experience in my work in the world of NASCAR, which is something else that I do, but that more and more NASCAR fans are becoming wine enthusiasts.
Well, I had,
didn't realize that.
No, I had noticed that because obviously if you work a little bit with NASCAR, I do touch it on a tangent, and people will come ask me. They have the Behringer, you know, Behringer is a sponsor on a car. It seems like BV is the official wine of NASCAR.
Yeah.
There are wines that are tied into all this, and it has astonished me. I remember once I saw a pink Behringer car run by, and I literally almost broke my ankle and cracked my neck trying to see exactly what that was.
We don't want you doing that.
I know. It was just one of those things where I was in mid-sentence, tried to step off. I'm like, that was a Behringer White Zinfandel NASCAR.
where did
that come from, and how did it get there? But less face facts, it goes back to the fact that we are becoming, I think it's not a politically correct term anymore. I knew when I was growing up, and I'm kind of dating myself here, we were talking about the United States being a big melting pot. And I think now with kids, they're leaning more towards the toss salad analogy instead of everyone trying to be homogenized, so to speak. But markets are overlapping with each other. You can have great Chardonnay at NASCAR races. On the flip side of it, you can go to the Kentucky Derby and have a Jack Daniel's Country Cocktail or a Budweiser. So you never really know how things are going to come across. So I personally love country music. I have no problem with it. So I'm enjoying the fact that a lot of people are recommending songs that I know I love, but I've never really stopped to think about the fact there's wine in the song. Country Boy Can Survive by Hank Williams Jr.
There is wine.
If you had ever told me that Hank Williams Jr. had a song out that mentioned wine, I would have told you you were insane. Oh. So we are learning something. That's what our public is doing to us and our listeners. You are edumacating us, and God knows we need to be edumacated around here.
One of my favorite groups of all time, Paul Revere and the Raiders, had a song about wine. Didn't realize that until I was looking through their stuff the other day. It's called Country Wine.
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
There is something right on the tip of my tongue that I know they did. It's like a one-hit wonder, but I can't think of what it is.
Kicks. Kicks was the big song.
Okay.
Yeah. Hungry, Good Thing, good songs.
Are we going to be tormented?
I might dig some up. You never know.
Oh, Lord, I knew I shouldn't have got off this tangent. All right, since you are kind enough to educate us, we are going to educate you. We have this week's wine recommendations. And as this show is starting out, I'm a little bit all over the board on my wine recommendations this week. I may have recommended this wine before, but it was one of those very, very long weekends, and I decided I needed something to treat myself with. And the Chardonnay I went to was Rombauer Carneris Chardonnay 2009. This thing is huge. It is big. It is flashy. It is buttery. They say he's a man's man. This is a Chardonnay Chardonnay. This is something you set the benchmark by. This is something that real Chardonnay drinkers drink. This is something that Cabernet drinkers drink. This is just really pleasant, nice zen in a glass. This is just a great way to relax. It also goes great with salads, food. There is nothing this wine can't stand up to. Because it's from Carneris, you get that nice little tropical feel, so it does have a little bit of delicacy to it. But there is no way you don't know what you're drinking when you have this in the glass. So for those of you who follow my lead and are great Chardonnay drinkers and like those that tend to whap you upside the head, this is a Chardonnay from you. Rombauer, wow. Carneris Chardonnay 2009.
How much are they paying you?
They're not.
I've never seen you so excited about a wine.
Well, I have been behaving as of late. Probably for the last 2 weeks, I have been tasting wine, but I haven't been in a situation where I really wanted to drink wine. Because I knew that after the last few weeks I've had, once I start drinking...
It never stops.
I'm not going to be like, it's not likely I'm going to stop anytime soon. So this weekend, I finally broke down and opened a bottle, and I felt bad. One of my girlfriends had stopped by, and my husband was around, and both of them kind of looked, and I poured myself a glass, and I put the bottle back in the refrigerator, and they're both standing staring at me. I looked at them and said, find your own wine. You're not having any of that one. So that's how that went. So that's why I'm excited about that one. So that is Rombauer Carneris 2009 Chardonnay. Now, the other one, it may have just been the name of the wine that drew it to me, Smoking Loon Syrah.
Hmm.
You know, I've been feeling a little bit
named
loony.
After anybody special?
Yes, no, not named after anyone special, but I did pick this bottle up. It has a great label, which, you know, I hate when people say, oh, it has the cutest label, that's why I bought it. That annoys me, but it really does. It stands out on the shelf, which is why I picked it out. It is well under $10, but for... to be a value wine and to be inexpensive, it had great strawberry flavors, had great chocolate flavors. You got a lot of pepper off it. So it really was a good counterpoint. And what I liked about it, a lot of times when you start getting into red wines that are under that $10 mark, unless you're going to go to Merlot, which I keep trying to get all of you to do, you wind up with this grapey flavor. Now, for those of you, once again, I'm going to date myself in this show. When you used to go to the arcades or you went to the amusement park and you could get those little plastic grape things that had the swirly straw on it and it tasted like grape juice and you were all happy because you had it and you would wear it for the rest of the day. A lot of times when you have those inexpensive wines, they literally taste like Welch's grape juice. This one does not. It is very smooth. It is very easy drinking. It's silky. It has rounded tannins to it, which means that you don't wind up feeling like you've just sucked on an aspirin for a while. This thing is really, really good for the price point. So Smoking Loon Syrah, which you can find under $10. Rombauer Carneris Chardonnay, which you cannot find for under $10, but no one ever said I was really easy to keep. As people tend to point out, I'm cheap to feed and very expensive to water. So those are your wine recommendations. I feel like I have educated you as you have educated me. But as long as I'm going to get on the education idea of things, we recently did a show. We talked about wine terms, and thank you very much. Loved all the response I got on that. But people started asking me. They were talking about labels, and it's been all over the news. For those of you that do follow the wine news, Daily Wine News, Wine Business News, wine.com, you name it, everyone has some kind of thing where they send you what's going on in the wine world. The biggest thing right now has been wine labeling laws. And of course, we've gone over this over and over and over again, but people are getting very vocal on one side or the other about the fact that the FDA is thinking about having wineries put calorie content, sodium content, nutritional value, all that kind of stuff on our favorite beverages. And it's becoming a very divided line. People are saying, yes, I want to know what I'm drinking. Yes, I want to know the carbs in it. And the other half of us are kind of like, no, for the love of God, please don't tell me. It's like having an individual chocolate chip cookie and you telling me the calorie content on it. There are some things I just don't want to know. So we are actually looking at a divided line on this. So we want to know what you think. 877-4-CRUSH-1 or email me, lauralawson.com. What do you want to know about your wine? Besides how it tastes, besides how it smells, besides what color is it, do you really want to know how many calories are in that sip? We're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, we are going to go over your calls, your emails, and probably talk about this labeling thing a little bit more in depth.
Laura Lawson's got more Wine Crush in just a moment.
She had kisses sweeter than wine.
You've been hearing and seeing good things about Z-Max Micro Lubricant everywhere, and you're curious, what is Z-Max Micro Lubricant? Well, it's the only pure micro lubricant that penetrates into the metal of your engine to clean out deposit buildup, improve gas mileage, and your engine's performance. Go ahead, get a bottle, add Z-Max to your oil and gas. It's easy to do. Get Z-Max at a retail performance partner near you, and you'll experience a smoother, stronger running, better performing engine. Z-Max it.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial, plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Don't let your car or truck turn into a clunker. Z-Max. Z-Max, added to your oil and your gas tank, can clean internal engine components and fuel systems, reduce engine wear, and give you better mileage. Z-Max is a pure micro lubricant that gives you a smoother, stronger running, better performing engine. These are some big claims, but they've all been backed up by some of the most rigorous testing in the industry. Z-Max Micro Lubricant, available at your favorite auto parts retailer.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. Hey, Kent, that didn't sound like Paul Revere and the Raiders.
It is not Paul Revere and the Raiders. As a matter of fact, I have no idea who that is.
All right.
But it sounds good. I love it.
All right. Well, that's right as rain.
I just played that because I love it. Yeah.
Well, hey, as long as you're happy, that's really all that matters.
Well, I'm not happy about everything, and I need to address that right now because the only reason I came back in to do the show today, I was going to let Laura do it again.
Right.
The only reason I came back was because you said, Laura said that you were bringing hamburger, that we had hamburger. And now I realize it's Dan Berger that you said was on the show. And I came in to eat. That's all.
You know, I realize, and I apologize for our listeners. This will only be another 30 seconds. I realize this is a wine show, but I've just got to ask this question. After the cooperation I've gotten with you so far today, the fact that you're looking for a hamburger, do men get together as a group and decide this is the week we're going to pick on this one woman, and all y'all get together who know each other and make a pact to say, okay, we're all going to misinterpret or ignore everything that Laura says this week.
That's not true. It's not just one woman. We usually pick them out in groups and go after a bunch of them at once. That's our plan.
So just because you call all women crazy, and men do call all women crazy, you do realize y'all put us there, right?
Crazy and not being able to understand you are two different things. We do not think you're crazy. We think you plot against us.
Okay. So
we know you're organized.
All right, listeners, I am so sorry. Yes, contrary to popular belief, you are listening to The Wine Crush, not just The Crush at this point. And we are talking about wine. And what specifically we are discussing is, I'm going to go back on this to the labeling laws again, just because I still find this fascinating. Maybe now Kent has gotten me off on this deep tangent, but let's go have some fun with this. All right, according to labeling laws, what they are asking, the Federal Tax and Trade Bureau wants to have proposed calorie, carbohydrate, serving size, and alcohol to be printed on the bottles. I get it. I understand. If you pick up a beer, if you pick up, I don't know whether it's Michelob Ultra or what's the little one, MGD 64, the little guy doing his little exercises while he's drinking. I understand that people really got into the Atkins phase and they want to know the carbohydrates and they're trying to plan their diet. But ultimately, let's think about this. We have a show. You are sitting here listening to learn about wine. You're learning about wine because wine is already complicated. As we covered in another show, wine can be racy, it can be deep, it can be stringent, it can be tannic, it can be fat, it can be flabby, it can be thin, it can be skinny. There are so many different terms that you can use to associate with wine that there are times if you're trying to sit down and read a wine publication, you really need a thesaurus, a dictionary, or tutor to take you all the way through it. So that's just to read about wine. Then you sit down in a group and you're going to have a wine tasting and you put the wine to your nose and you're smelling it and you're swirling it and you're trying hard not to spill it on the table. And then you're trying to describe what you're smelling. It's not what you're tasting, it's what you're smelling. Then when you finally get to the taste points, there's a whole bunch of other different things and terminology you can look at. So we make wine difficult enough as it is. Do we really care after we're trying to get our head all the way around everything that's going on in that glass to begin with? How many calories it has? Does it make that much of a difference? Let's face facts. If you have to sit down and break down and analyze how many calories are going into each individual little sip you're having.
No, it's not why.
Go
I
have
drink.
A scotch.
That's not why I drink wine.
Go have a scotch. Go have a Diet Coke. Go have MGD 64. Because if you're going to worry that much how many calories you're consuming, there's other things for you to be worried about in life. Now, I understand the people on the labeling laws that want to know the sulfite content. Oh, wait, that's already mandated on the laws. You already have to have that on label. And I definitely understand people wanting to know how much alcohol is in the wine. Oh, wait, that's already on the bottle, too. So, health issues are already addressed on the bottle, and alcohol content's already addressed on the bottle. Do you really want to know how many calories are in that molting Godiva cake that you had at Morton's last night? I know I don't. So why do you want to ruin the pleasure of a good wine knowing that you just consumed 250 calories?
Because you're the government.
It's not the government.
Who's doing it?
Well, I assume the government's trying to lean into all these people who walk up and down the supermarket aisles, the ones that aren't paying attention. All they do is they have their little book and their calorie counters and picking up everything to see what has the less carbs.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. So we make wine difficult enough as it is. Do we really need all this on the label? And the one last thing I am going to point out, hey, you can put this stuff on the label all day long. More power to you. You can put carbs, niacin, riboflavin, total calories, total sodium, total amount of carbohydrates for the day. You can put all that on the label of a bottle. No one's going to tell you what's in your glass. It's not like the glass is automatically going to flash up on the side of it, what's in it, its contents. So what difference does it make? Unless you plan, well, okay, let me take that back. For those of you who tend to partake in beverages like I do and look at the bottle as a single serving, then yes, you are going to know exactly what you're consuming. But past that, yeah, what difference does it make? So it'll be interesting to talk to Dan Berger. I want to see if his idea of this new labeling law is part of the blanding of American wine. All right, I am off my soapbox, and I usually save that for the end, but that just fired me up. We do like your calls and email. Surprisingly, we do occasionally answer them, and generally, we don't make fun of you. That's right. We're supposed to be going back to that world of Zen, aren't we? We're supposed
never,
to be kinder.
Never make fun of people.
No, I'm supposed to be kinder and gentler. Anyway, two of you were brave enough to have emails today that I think are applicable to what we're discussing. One is, I read on a label for a red wine, Moscato added. The red wine said sweet red wine. I thought Moscato was a white grape. What is going on with that? Is there a red Moscato? Well, the short answer to that is no. There is not a red Moscato. Understand this. Whether you are buying a bottle of Cabernet that costs you $250 or whether you are buying a red wine that says sweet red wine, there is always the chance that something's blended into it. In fact, I would say 90% of the time, it's not just what's on the label. So yes, it is perfectly acceptable for Moscato, which is, yes, a white wine, to have blended with the red wine to make it sweeter. It happens all over the world, all over time. Italy, in fact, Chianti, it used to be approved that white wine got blended into Chianti. Northern Rome, same thing. So there's your answer. Yes, it is still a red wine, and yes, you can add white wine to it. So I hope that helped. But right now we're going to take a small break, and when we return, we'll have Mr. Dan Berger himself hopefully helping us get to the bottom of why wine can be bland.
Newsflash. Finally, there's something conservatives and liberals can agree on. Gold. For thousands of years, gold has united mankind regardless of race, religion, or politics. Gold conserves wealth from financial uncertainty, a higher cost of living, and higher taxes. Yet gold also offers liberal benefits, such as growing in value by 300% since 2001. In fact, gold transcends left-right politics because its value is based on ultimate economic truth and substance rather than symbolic political promises. So, whether you're a conservative, liberal, or an independent, gold should be a part of your portfolio and family legacy. Call now 800-932-5146. That's 800-932-5146. Request their free 2010 DVD, CD, and Economic Realities Report. Call 800-932-5146 and ask about creating a gold IRA today.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
You're listening to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and we are just off and rolling on such a rant today. Here is the perfect time to introduce Mr. Dan Berger. Dan has pretty much done everything you ever could have done when it comes to writing something in the wine business. He's been at it since 1976, and I would imagine by now he pretty much has it down pat. Dan, welcome to The Wine Crush.
Oh, thank you very much, Laura. It's nice to be with you.
It is fun to have you on the show. I have to admit this. And all my other friends in the business can close their ears. I love, absolutely love, reading your vintage experiences. I have read on and off most of the stuff you have read some point, or you have written at some point from 76 on. I like the way you perceive things because you don't just take it from a holier-than-thou, I'm sitting up at the top of the mountain kind of attitude towards wine. You see all sides of it, whether it's the grower, whether it's the winemaker. You take the good and the bad and the ugly, and you put it all together and put it out there to see. So for that, I give you kudos and hats off.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun for me.
See, a lot of people don't see wine as that much fun. You know, they just think it's this beautiful, glamorous, wonderful thing. So hopefully between you and I today, we can have some fun with that within itself and set some things straight.
I hope so. I just take it as a beverage.
That's what it's supposed to be. And that's actually, is interesting enough, one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on the show is today, one thing we are focused on so far is talking about the labeling laws and the fact that when you look at the federal FTBB, they want to go ahead and have us put alcohol, carbohydrates, put all the stuff on a wine label that you find on your cookies, your crackers, your donuts, whatever you happen to pick up in the grocery store. And there is part of the group that is out there, when you start looking at groundswell opinion, that really want this to happen so they can know exactly how many carbohydrates they're having. And there's another part of the group, like me, that thinks it's just a beverage. Why should I overanalyze it? So you wrote the article called The Blanding of American Wine, which, by the way, absolutely loved it in the Press Democrat, where you talked about how things are becoming not homogenous, but along the lines of it seems like everyone has a pat imagined answer for everything else. So I figured today you and I can debate back and forth on that and have some fun.
Well, I hope there's not too much debate. I think what we see in the wine business, certainly I've seen it since I was starting to drink wine literally in the 60s, was that there was some distinctiveness back then, and there's less and less distinctiveness now. Everybody wants to make the same sort of style, regardless of the type of varietal that you're using. So red wine tastes like red wine, regardless of the varietal, and white tastes pretty much like white. There was a period of time there where Viogniers were being put into new French oaks so that they became more like Chardonnay. I didn't see the point, and on. One of the greatest things that ever happened to the wine industry was in the late 90s when we started to see New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc coming in, and people actually said, wait a minute, this is different. Let's try it.
What is this? This is great. You mean back, back when before we renamed Sauvignon Blanc to Fumé Blanc?
Yeah, when Fumé Blanc became sort of a euphemism for nothing, actually.
Exactly. Well, don't we see this pretty much across the board everywhere, though? It seems like the more and more we have internet, the more and we have Facebook or Foursquare or Twitter or tweets or all the other social media. Do you think society is becoming more homogenized as we get through it?
I would have said that absolutely 5 years ago. But what I'm really most encouraged about is the younger generation. I think this youngest generation called the millennials, I think they're the most exciting generation we've had since the end of World War II. I think we're going to see a revolution in wine, and it's all changing. And it, thank goodness for these people, because they really are getting it. And I was trying to give a message to that generation some years before they were born. I'm a big advocate and proponent of things like Chenin Blanc and Riesling. I'm a big fan of Le Grain. I like all these unusual grape varieties because they are distinctive. And I think this millennial generation is getting it. They're inquisitive. They're not put off by grape varieties that they never heard of before. And they're not just asking for your dad's old Cabernet.
No, they're not. They're actually testing the boundaries. And I have watched that, I guess, over the last 3 years. But see, here's what's interesting. For you and I who are true, I don't want to say aficionados. We are wine people. We are open to a whole bunch of different things. You know, you said something like Chenin Blanc being an unusual grape. If you look at the rest of the world and you look at the old world, it's not an unusual grape. It's just certain times, certain places to enjoy it. But if you talk about it in America, if you talk about it in today's wine world, one, it was either the great gallon that was at the bottom of the shelf, or two, it's something that, oh, well, that's sweet, I don't like it. So I agree with you. It is out of mainstream for us. Is there a way we can bring that around to the general public and realize, hey, Chenin Blanc's an everyday great thing, just go to the Loire Valley?
Well, 5 years ago, I would have said, not a chance. Now I'm thinking, hey, go buy Vouvray, and there you got your Chenin Blanc, and it's going to be a fine and a great example of a dry white wine with a different aromatic and taste profile. To me, that's the whole key to why we call these grapes varietals, because there is a variety of flavor.
People miss that entirely, though. Now, listen, I have no room to talk. If you've listened to the show or hear my intro, I am a Chardonnay diva. I love all kind of wine. I really, really do. In fact, I don't think I've ever found a varietal I 100% hated top to bottom. Producers, yes, varietal, no. But I love Chardonnay. I like the way it can manifest itself. I think it tells me a lot about a winemaker. It tells me a lot about a region. But also, I know when to step away from Chardonnay. I know when I've had enough and I want something crisp. I want the Sauvignon Blanc. Like you were mentioning, the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. So it can have a great, refreshing part of your palate. Whether you're looking at Chasselet, whether you're looking at other white varietals, there is a time and a place for everything. But when you look at Chardonnays that are being cookie-cuttered to taste just like what the next-door neighbor is doing or just like what they're doing up north or down south, I think it does limit the wine business as a whole, and I think it limits people's palates. When you talked about, in your article, you talked about Syrah specifically. You talked about someone who decried the idea that Syrah tasted like pepper. I have to admit, I had to reread that 3 times. I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. I thought Syrah is supposed to have pepper in it. What are your takes?
Yeah, that's one of the key points of that of what that article was about. This concept of putting blandness into wine to hit the middle part of the marketplace is all well and good if the wine is $5 or $6 or $8 a bottle. But once you start to get up there in the esoteric range of $15 to $30 or $40 or even more, consumers should not be looking for the same flavor they're getting in the $5 wine. And I think with your message about Chardonnay is extremely well taken. One of the points that I made in a subsequent article, we visited Stony Hill Winery in the Napa Valley this past weekend, and we tasted Mike Collini's new 2009 Chardonnay. Ooh. Now, here's a wine that had no malolactic fermentation, no brand new oak, and the wine is like Chablis. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous style of Chardonnay. It doesn't mean to say it. It's the only style. There's plenty of styles. You can find dozens of styles that are 100% new oak and 100% malolactic. And the wines are excellent in and of themselves. But when you want a different style, there are still producers out there who are offering you that different style.
Especially from a woman's perspective, you think that I probably have 80 little black dresses, but they all look different. Hey, Dan, I'm going to take a small break right here. If you don't mind hanging out, would love to talk about this a little bit more after this commercial break.
Great.
All right. We'll be right back here at the Wine Crush.
For pictures, videos, show recaps, and more, become a fan of Wine Crush Radio Group on Facebook.
GE Direct is a great source to help you get out of high credit card debt. When you call the number I'm about to give you, here's what you can expect. You'll speak with personally screened, we call them debt counselors. Their job is to listen to you, but be prepared to tell them your entire debt picture. We want to know who you owe and how much you owe. Then we'll talk with you about how much you can afford monthly to pay off your bills. And finally, we'll give advice on how you can pay off your bills and be debt-free in about 3 years. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call this number right now. 800-917-1329. 800-917-1329. A free 15-minute call can change your life. 800-917-1329. 800-917-1329. That's 800-917-1329.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactive works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactive Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactive's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be.
Make more friends and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Dan Berger. Dan, are you still with us?
I'm right here, in fact. I'm driving across the Golden Gate Bridge as we speak.
Oh, you're lucky. I'm very envious right now. I hope you're enjoying the view. Well, be careful and watch out changing lanes. So as we're going through this, what we left before we had our commercial break, we were talking about the blanding and how consumers, you know, sometimes whether it's a $4 or $5 or $6 bottle of wine, it's one thing for it all to taste kind of generic. But, you know, as you pay higher prices, it's nice to get into the more the esoteric wines. Here's a question for you. And I honestly don't have an answer. I have an opinion on it, but I don't have an answer. We're seeing this in the last 15 years. When you look at the American style California, let's go ahead and just go to California wines. A lot of times our large producers are making wines that try and emulate one another. Oh, that one sold well. I think I'll make one that tastes just like it. Now, we all know the laws of supply and demand. Ultimately, people are buying something. They have a demand for it. Then the supply, obviously, we try and raise the supply. Do you think the consumers are the one that have encouraged the blending of American wine? Or has the fact that producers are making very similar styles have produced a consumer that are just used to having the bland wine?
If you were to divide up the consumers of wines throughout the United States into various groupings, at the very lowest level, there would be a group of entry-level buyers who would be buying probably, you know, $4.50 boxes of wine, and that's satisfying to them. At the very highest level, there would be a group of people who wouldn't pay less than $100 for a bottle, and they're collectors, and they've got it stashed away at 52 degrees and so forth. In between are a whole lot of different levels of consumer, and one level of consumer is perfectly satisfied with whatever sells for $5 to $7, period. End of story. They're not going to spend more than maybe $8 would be their upper limit.
That would be their Friday night wine.
Exactly. And for those people, the blanding of America is perfectly fine because they're not paying very much attention, and they don't care whether the wine comes from Missouri or Chile, or it doesn't make any difference as long as it has some kind of sales perk. I don't know what to call it. Maybe it's a prevention, or maybe it was a recommendation from a wine writer, or it might have been a recommendation from the retailer. Those people are perfectly content to buy the blended wine. To me, at the upper echelons, and we're starting to talk $10 to $15, people ought to be looking for more distinctiveness. And what they're finding, what they have found for the last decade, is that European wine is much more suitable to their palate. And the reason is that in Europe, with its continental climate, they cannot manipulate the wine to make it indistinct. They have to make it somewhat distinct because that's what the climate gives them. California is a whole different game. We've got a Mediterranean climate. It's warmer here. It's the Sunshine State. There's no question that we can make wines that are where the grapes have stayed on the vine long enough so that the distinctive varietal character has been forcibly removed from it. So as a result, we end up with one bottle out of every three in the United States that is being sold today in this country is from another country. And it's the highest percentage in the history of our country. We're buying more imported wine today than ever before.
I think, when you look at that as a whole, when you start thinking about people buying more imported wine, yes, it definitely hits the palate when you look at what's being done in the south of France, when you look at Italy. But do you think that started because you look at what's happening with Australia right now, and there was a time probably 5 years ago that in a blind tasting, didn't matter whether it was a $5 bottle of wine, a $14 bottle of wine, you could pick out an Australian Shiraz, an Australian Chardonnay, an Australian Cabernet, and never even look twice. Do you think they're part of the reason? Did they set up a pattern and a homogenization for the American palate?
Laura, you said it yourself earlier when you said, is the consumer driving this? I think that the consumer, to a great degree, drove what ended up to be Yellowtail and, to a great degree, some of the other Australian brands. These wines have virtually nothing to do with the greatness of Australian wine. I've visited Australia 16 times over the last 18 years, and I can tell you that Australia makes fabulous wine. We're not seeing very many of them. But when you do, they are reasonably priced, and they're really distinctive.
Absolutely. Now, look at Michael Twelvetrees wines. They're outstanding. It's probably in my top 10 favorite.
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of that, but it's not, I mean, it's dwarfed. If 25 million cases of Australian wine is coming into the United States, about 24 million of it is somewhat more along the lines of commodity.
All right, but before we get too far off a tangent, you and I could probably talk for hours. In a brief synopsis, what can our listener, the consumer, do to stay away from bland wines?
Well, I had a column a week ago that I sort of identified a little bit of that, one of which was to look at these other varieties. Look at California Chenin Blanc. Look at California Beaujolais-style Zinfandel, things like that. But the following week, I wrote about unknown Italian varieties. And when you start to see grape varieties like Suave coming back into vogue, and Grillo, and some of these unusual grape varieties that are coming in the United States at $6 to $7 to $10 a bottle, they are very distinctive. They're very unusual. When you taste it, you say to yourself, "Gee, what is this?" Stick with that bottle. Stay with the bottle. You get some air. Serve it with food. And what you're finding is that wines, whether it's from Matiran, from France, or whether it's from some district in Austria or the Alsace, whether it's from Chile, South Africa, Pinotage, whatever it may be, there are plenty of distinctive wines out there at fair prices.
Well, that's pretty much all we can ask for. Dan, thank you very much for being part of the Crush. I definitely will stay in touch with you, and we will keep our eye on the trends. And hopefully a year from now, you and I will have all of our friends drinking some Cortesia of one shot or the other.
I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Laura.
All right, we're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, we will wrap up and see how we can not be bland.
Need a wine recommendation for a party? Want Laura to address something on the show? Email her at lauralawson@winecrush.com.
Term life insurance. It can be a powerful way to protect your assets and your family. You work hard to earn and save your money to build a nest egg for the future. Don't let it get wiped out because you didn't plan ahead. Take the time now and make a small investment in $500,000 or more in quality term life insurance. Call the Term Lifeline and let us shop the best companies to give you the lowest rates. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. Ask about some of our 10 and 20 year fixed rate plans with guaranteed rates. Call the Term Lifeline right now for your free insurance quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. You owe it to yourself to protect your family and your assets. Make term life insurance part of that plan. Call the Term Lifeline right now. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
If you have high credit card balances and other unsecured debt, including medical bills and various personal loans, please listen to this free consumer alert from the CESI Debt Helpline. You can take control of your debt, but you need our help. Our partner companies negotiate millions of dollars in debt with the large credit card companies every month. We save our customers thousands of dollars in debt. These special programs do not offer loans, and debt reduction does not work on student, auto, or home loans. Call today and see how much we can save you. As a free consumer service, the first 100 people that call in right now will receive a free debt analysis. Learn how you can reduce your debt today with this free call.
Call us 24 hours a day at this number.
800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815. 6815.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Ayah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Hi-hi. Concrete. Hi-ya! Brick walls. Hi-ya! Trees. Hi-ya! Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Hi-ya!
It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
I'm Laura Lawson. This is The Wine Crush. A very special thank you going out to Dan Berger. We did not get a chance to mention it, but of course, the link to Dan Berger's weekly wine column will be on The Wine Crush. And I encourage our listeners, please do read it. He does a lot of different things around the country and writes for a lot of different places. But Dan gives you a very honest opinion about the wine business. Is it necessarily the right opinion? No. Is mine necessarily the right opinion? No. But it does help you see, I don't want to say a darker side, but a more realistic side of things. So a special thanks to Dan again. But it does bring up an interesting point. When think about, I've been stuck on chocolate chip cookies. Maybe I should have had lunch today. But if you go up and down the Mega Mart aisle and you look for a chocolate chip cookie, I can think of 15 brands off the top of my head. And when I'm looking for that cookie, does it make a difference what's on the back of the label? No. Does the flavor make a difference to me? Yes. Does the brand make a difference to me? Perhaps. But why is that? And does that tie in with what Dan's saying when it comes to wine? Are we looking at labels? Are we looking at producers? Are we looking at bottlers? Are we looking at it for taste? Because that's where I think the blending of American wine is. I think ultimately we get a whole bunch of winemakers together. We get a whole bunch of people that like Chardonnay. And the consumer, you, the listener, you are voting with your dollars. So if you want to continue to buy the same mass-produced Chardonnay that tastes just like everything else does, then you are sending a message to all of our winemakers and to all of our growers that this is what you prefer and this is what you're going to spend the money on. This goes back to something we talked about in 2010 and we're going to continue to see in 2011. It's a great time to start liking wine. There are great values out there. And the values are not the $2 to $5 to $7 that Dan were talking about that all taste alike. You can find different varietals, different styles, and different producers all for under that $10 mark. So day in, day out, do you want to buy that same label that has blended American wine? I don't know. I really don't know, but what you have to realize is that you are voting with your dollars. Every time you buy a bottle of wine, every time you buy it because of the label, because of the producer, or the flavors, you're sending a message to California, to Washington, even to France, to Italy, to Chile. So next time you're picking up a bottle of wine, please make sure you are considering the fact that how you spend your money is dictating how we're going to be drinking in the next 5 years. Well, as always here at The Crush, we remind you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told. Well, except occasionally when I go ahead and I tell you to please go ahead and vote with your dollars and drink something different. But most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.